Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, December 11th, 2015. And with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. And I hope you're doing well, Brian.
Mostly, yep.
Mostly is better than a lot of people out there. So good for you.
Yay me.
Yay you. And John Martellaro, I hope you're doing fine.
Yep. Fit as a fiddle, ready to dance.
All right. Well, then we'll turn on the cameras. We'll spin up the records, and you can get your groove thing on. But before you get your groove thing on, I need to let all of our listeners know we have a sponsor this week, and that sponsor is Drobo, which is pretty awesome. I'm glad they're sponsoring us. I'll talk about them more soon, and I'll share with you the discount that they have just for our listeners. Now, before we get there, though, Brian, you wrote a really great piece yesterday that I think we just need to explore a little bit more. And your piece was about Apple trying to get into the streaming television space and why that didn't work and why maybe that was actually kind of okay, sort of.
Yeah, kind of.
I say I wanted to leave it very open for you so that you could run with this any direction you'd like.
Well, so first of all, hats off to Peter Kafka over at Recode, because he wrote a piece. And I originally was planning on just writing a sort of, you know, cool stuff found, saying, hey, go check out this piece because it's good. And basically it's he was filling in some of the behind the scenes stuff on Apple TV and the streaming service, and this story that originated out of Bloomberg, and Les Moonves, who is the CEO of CBS, who said that Apple shelved their plans for a streaming service. I believe y'all talked about that yesterday on the show, right?
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about Apple streaming services throughout the week.
So, like I said, he was filling in some of the details and included how Apple's looking to basically do a nice, small, focused bundle, which is not particularly new. But he did specifically say that that's the thing that the TV networks are just, you know, rebelling against. And so thought it was a good piece, was going to point our readers to it, and kind of turned into a different story when I actually went to go do the writing. And here's what it turned into. So Apple is looking to offer a slimmed down package of channels, because that's what we want. We as consumers, we hate paying, you know, 100 bucks a month to get the channels, you know, the 20 channels that we want, or the 15 channels that we want, or the 10 channels that we want. And the only way to get them is to actually get these large bundles and pay through the nose. And we won't ever watch almost all of those channels ever.
That's exactly why I became a cord cutter.
Yeah, fair enough. And it's why other people become a cord cutter. And it's why more people are considering a cord cutting and looking for it. And it seems like Apple really wants to offer something at 30 bucks a month. And the way to offer something at 30 bucks a month is to do this slimmed down number of channels. And I started thinking about exactly what that might mean and why, you know, so you have to look at the way the television industry has used these extra channels. Part of it is simply, the network owners and the large corporations that own all of the stations these days realized that they could make more money by just coming up with some bogus channel and then insisting that the cable operators license that if they want to get their main property, which is pretty clever.
Sure.
If, you know.
Kind of annoying also.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, you had stations like FX, which Fox owns, and you have stations like actually, I think USA was purchased. I think USA might have started off as something else. I'm not sure about that. But you had all these various channels that were owned by the major TV networks, and they were started off being used for reruns, you know, both old reruns and then just the, you know, the reruns of the current shows that they're airing, that sort of thing. You know, B-movies, has-been movies, that sort of stuff. But as the number of those channels proliferated, a funny thing happened is they all started competing with each other. And the thing that they found that worked was actually doing some good quality original programming.
Yes.
And the reason why this is pertinent is this. If we weren't forced to take these unwanted channels, which, by the way, some of those channels do get watched despite the fact that we think that we don't want them. Some of us are watching them anyway. If we weren't forced to take all those extra channels, there never would have been a space and a need to create all this original programming that I think we're in a golden age of TV right now. And that is mostly because of the alternative channels that are out there on cable.
You know, when you first started talking about we're in a golden age of television, it turned on a light for me. It was one of those moments where I realized, yeah, you're right. The programming we have on television today is better overall than anything that I've seen my entire life, and there's more of it.
Yeah, there's just so much of it. So, like, Justified was aired for 5 seasons, and I think it was best drama on TV when it was on the air. An amazing show.
I was a big fan myself.
You know, of course, there's all the stuff that HBO has done, all the stuff that Showtime has done, but, you know, you've got the... are you guys Psych fans?
Yes.
Oh, you, yes. John?
Psych?
Yeah.
No, I never got into Psych. I liked White Collar and Covert Affairs, but... never cared for Psych.
Psych was the best of the mystery shows.
I enjoyed it too. It was funny. You've got the all the shows that the Sci-Fi Channel has done. Of course, they've done some real losers too, but their standout shows are just standout. You've got American Horror Story, which is, you know, fascinating drama that would never in a million years be on the mainstream network shows. You've got a show like Archer, same thing. Archer's an amazing, it's an amazing show, amazing, yes, cartoon.
Well, and one of the three big networks getting on board with what I'll call a primetime cartoon.
Four big networks. Got to count Fox these days.
Oh, that's right. Four big networks. Yeah, it's just not something that you would expect. And so Archer had a place where it could sit and it could flourish and it could be the show that it is and approach the topics that it does in the way that it does. CBS would never let Archer air.
No, to be fair, Fox had a little show called The Simpsons and Family Guy.
Yes, that's true.
But still, Archer definitely goes in a direction that is not on mainstream TV today. These shows probably wouldn't have ever existed were the all these other channels that we've been forced to take all this time, if we hadn't been forced to take them. Now, I'm not saying that therefore we should be happy that we've been paying through the nose for our cable all this time, but I'm saying that we got something back for paying out the nose through our cable.
Sure. And yeah, I think we did. If you had asked me this 10 years or if you'd made this assertion 10 years ago, I would be a little resistant to agree with you. But today, I have no reservation at all.
Okay. Well, so now let me tell you why I'm wrong.
Okay. Tell me why you're wrong. Now that you've convinced me.
The other part of my thesis is that Apple looking to disrupt TV by offering us limited channels could actually have a detrimental effect on the development of all of great programming.
Right. The reason being because we're not paying for all these extra channels and therefore funding the shows that that the networks are making.
Yeah, and providing eyeballs for them, because like I said, we might say that we don't want these extra channels. Turns out that a lot of us are watching some of those extra channels. That's right. A fact, right? But so here's why I'm wrong. The internet will now play the same role that all these channels that we've been forced to pay have been playing.
How about if I say that you are not wrong and that we are at a transition point between models?
We talked about that yesterday, I think.
Yeah, we did talk about that a little bit. Yeah. So, Brian, the old model where we have to pay for all the extra channels is maybe at a point where it's time to transition to the new model, which is the internet.
Right, it's true. What that means, though, is what that largely means, there's going to be a disruption in our golden age of TV, I think. I mean, like, well, I know we're seeing right now, we've got Netflix and Amazon Prime producing amazing programming, that's for sure.
Yes. My two favorite networks right now, believe it or not.
YouTube could possibly become another player there.
They want to.
They want to. But part of my point here is that great, while the internet lowers the barrier to entry tremendously to anyone wanting to produce video content, quality video content, generally speaking, is going to require capital. And it's going to require corporate backing.
And healthy studios.
Which means healthy studios. And I'm not sure that internet distribution offers the same kinds of opportunities there that the cable system has heretofore provided. And
the internet has a model for that, Brian. It's called Kickstarter. We don't quite do that yet, but if somebody rolls out.
Veronica Mars already did that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Veronica Mars was funded on Kickstarter. Absolutely. Yeah,
that's one example, and that movie was, because everybody was so interested in doing it, that movie was produced for less money than most TV pilots cost.
All right, that's pretty impressive.
Well, yeah, but that's not a system. That's right. Not a replacement system. That's an aberration.
Right.
I don't know about that, Brian.
That's a blip on the radar screen.
I think that's a way to account for the disruption that you were talking about, where the internet focuses more on the consumer, funds it in different ways, finds its niche audience different ways, connects to them more directly.
It could. I will readily give you that. It could work out that way. I suspect that if the cable companies went away tomorrow, we'd have a huge, huge disruption in this golden age of TV.
You know, considering where the money is coming from right now, I believe you're right, Brian.
The money's coming from us. It's coming from advertisers too, but the money's coming from cable customers.
Yes.
And advertisers both.
Right. And part of what makes that money possible is this package deal that the networks demand for all their content.
Yeah. What Peter Kafka wrote, I keep mispronouncing his name, I'm sure it's Kafka. He wrote this sentence I thought that was great. He said, while TV executives will say they understand that consumers don't want to pay for channels they don't watch, all of them will argue that their channels are must-haves.
Yeah. Well, on one hand,
it's a very, very poignant statement.
Yeah, and of course, networks would say that. What I can't imagine a network saying, "We've got these three channels, but this one is crap." Even if it is, that's not what they're going to say. Nonetheless, if people weren't watching the shows, they would go away.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously. And if the sun didn't go up tomorrow, we'd all die.
Yeah, that would be a really sad day.
Where would those 10 to the 23rd erg seconds of angular momentum all go?
Nerd. Did it just get hot in here? Wow. All right. Well, I'm thinking that we just can't top that, so we should just move on to our next topic. But before we do, Drobo. Drobo is our sponsor this week, and I'm pretty excited about that because I've had really good luck with my Drobo, and I'd love for you guys to be able to have a good experience with a Drobo as well. So what Drobo is, it's like a RAID. It's a bunch of hard drives stuck into a box, and instead of being a system where you have to become like an IT expert to make it work, all you need to be able to do is figure out how to get this thing out of the box and plug wires in, and then it can do the rest for you. And so then you can just pop in your own hard drives and be up and running. You can use it. You can use a Drobo for data backups. You can use a Drobo for just extra file storage. You can get a model that goes on your network and then have shared storage for your network, or even turn it into a media server. So there's all these things you can do with a Drobo. I love that you don't have to shut anything down or reconfigure anything if you need to pull a drive out or put another drive in. You can hot swap the drives. That's really cool. When one of the drives, hard drives, in my Drobo 5D failed, I was sad because the hard drive failed, and I'm using mine primarily as a backup system. So that meant that I potentially lost part of my backup. What I did was I bought a new hard drive, popped the old one out while everything was running, put the new one in, the Drobo configured the new drive, and I was back in business, and I lost no data. It was absolutely awesome. So anyhow, I'm happy with my Drobo. I'd love for you guys to be happy with yours. And what you can do is head over to their store, drobostore.com, and then use the discount code TMO100 and pick up a Drobo Mini, a Drobo 4-bay, or a Drobo 5N for $100 off. It's a really sweet deal. Absolutely awesome. So you should totally check them out and take advantage of that discount, because $100 off any Drobo is pretty fantastic. So Drobo Mini, Drobo 4-bay, or Drobo 5N. Discount code is TMO100. And then start backing up your data. Start loading up your media files, whatever it is you want to do. But start dumping files on your brand new Drobo. Drobo, thank you for being our sponsor this week. That's totally awesome. Okay, so now the next thing that I wanted to hit today is more of a look at the state of iPad Pro cases. Now, John, you and I both have cases. We both have cases, and we have iPad Pros. There we go. I kind of went Yoda for a minute because I got all the words just in the wrong order.
Actually, I had one and returned it, and now I have another one.
Oh, no kidding. Well, that's So in your experience so far, how are we doing with iPad Pro cases?
I haven't seen a lot of traffic in my email from companies telling me that they have a new iPad Pro case that they want me to look at. The traditional case makers don't seem to be jumping on board. I queried one fellow who's the PR agent for his company the other day, and I asked him, do you have one coming out? And he said, well, no, regrettably, no.
Interesting.
The one I tried was the Logitech Create keyboard case. I love the keys. I love that they were backlit. But the case was bulky and heavy and created a problem inserting and removing the iPad Pro, and also the sleep wake and the volume buttons were hard to punch through the hard rubber. And I found that I hadn't fully digested the care and feeding of an iPad Pro. It's a different animal.
Yes.
It's larger and heavier, has a different torque on your hand. It takes up more room. It wants to have its own space on the desk. Unlike a conventional iPad, which can be easily used with a stylus and held in your lap and thrown onto the table, and, you know, sit on the nightstand. The iPad Pro is a professional device, and you put a case on it, and if it's the wrong kind of case, you can't use a keyboard. If you pick a case that has a keyboard, it may be too bulky. You'd like to be... I was talking to Steve Sandy about this in background mode when I interviewed him yesterday, on Wednesday. And it turns out that there's two modes for the iPad Pro. There's the mode where you want to be able to use it standalone in mm-hmm. your lap, portable, take it around, and you want to have a protective case on the back. For a long time, my iPad Pro didn't get as much use as it should have because I was treating it with kid gloves. And I was using the iPad Mini 4, which has an Apple smart cover.
I was doing that too. I wouldn't even take my iPad Pro out of my office for a while because I didn't feel like there was a case that was substantial enough to protect it.
Right. And then when you want to get serious with it, you'd like to sit it on your lap, maybe treat it as some kind of MacBook kind of device where it's balanced and it's secure and it won't tip overboard. Or at the very least, sit at a desk with a keyboard. And then the case that you select has to mesh well with the keyboard. So, and I'd have tried the Apple keyboard, the smart keyboard from Apple. And while it's well made and it's beautiful and it works, I didn't care for the key action. And I thought, well, if I am going to use this for creativity and production and writing, then it's got to have a really great keyboard. That's why I leaned towards the Logitech Create at the beginning. So I haven't yet resolved my combination of case and keyboard. Right now I'm using a case that I reviewed yesterday from Urban Armor Gear, a composite case. And it has a kickstand, so you can set it up on a table. Mm-hmm. It protects it very well. It even has a little widget where you can put your Apple Pencil. Oh, if only I had an Apple Pencil. Apple, I'm so upset. This is ridiculous. Can't get my hands on an Apple Pencil yet. Crazy. But if I did have an Apple Pencil, I'd be able to put it into this cute holder, set it up on the kickstand, and push my Apple Bluetooth keyboard in front of it, and I'd have a nice workstation. So I think the case makers were, to kind of wrap it up, concerned about how customers were going to use this device, what their needs were, and how many Apple would sell, and the technology that they'd have to fold into it, and to sell a lot of them, depending on how many Apple sells. And I think they took a wait-and-see attitude. And I got to compliment Urban Armor Gear for doing a really good job with this composite case. It's the best I've seen so far.
Wow. All right. Well, for me, what I'm seeing is that, we're out of time. All right, but I'm going to keep talking. What I've seen is that the case selection is pretty slim, and I have Apple Smart Cover and Smart Keyboard. And in my experience, I have to stop and think ahead of time, how am I going to use my iPad now?
Exactly.
And then I decide which cover goes onto it. And
isn't that interesting?
Yeah, because I can't just leave one on and be set for everything that I do. And I found that carrying it around when it goes out of my office, I'm actually putting it in my laptop backpack and carrying it in the padded sleeve that my MacBook Pro would otherwise go in.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I'm actually treating this more as a laptop than a tablet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I wonder whether Apple anticipated this care and handling because of its geometry and its weight. And the way you use it, all of the things that we just talked about come into play. And I don't know that the Apple Smart Keyboard solves the problem that we just discussed.
I really like the Apple Keyboard, but as a universal cover for my iPad Pro, it doesn't work. It's a great cover, and I'm not getting rid of it. But I can't just leave it on all the time. I have to mm-hmm. think about what I'm going to do. So I'm thinking that there's a dearth of really good cases for the iPad Pro, and I'm finding this absolutely interesting. And listeners, I'm curious, what cases are you using on your iPad Pro? And are you happy with them? Let me know. You can hit me up on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. You can shoot me an email. That would be observations@macobserver.com. And you can leave comments in today's show notes. I will check all those places. And I'm really curious what you have found for iPad Pro cases and what you think of them. So with that, we really are out of time. Brian, thank you so much for being here. And I'm so glad that you don't have to deal with the first world problem John and I are facing, which is how to find the right iPad Pro case.
I'm not. I wish I had that problem.
Oh, well, then I'll think positive, and maybe soon you will be in the same frustrating boat we are.
Maybe.
Maybe. John, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
It's always great to have both of you here. And Drobo, thank you for being our sponsor this week. Head over to their website, drobostore.com, and use the discount code TMO100 and pick yourself up a Drobo Mini, a Drobo 4-Bay, or a Drobo 5N for $100 off. That's an awesome deal. Thank you for extending that deal to our listeners, Drobo. And listeners, thank you for being here. We will see everyone again next week.